Hello, my name is Christopher Badger, barrister at Six Pump Court, and welcome to the Environment Law News Podcast, brought to you in association with LexisNexis. This week, I'm on my own in the studio, and we'll be taking you through a landmark case on litigation privilege, the priority of environmental obligations in insolvency, and the proposed increase in the single-use plastic bag charge in England. On the 5th of September, in serious fraud office against Eurasian Natural Resources Corporation Limited, or SFO against ENRC, the Court of Appeal overturned an earlier High Court decision, holding that documents produced during an internal investigation are protected by litigation privilege. In the High Court, Mr. Justice Andrews had held that notes made by ENRC's former solicitors of interviews with ENRC's current and former employees, conducted as part of an internal investigation into allegations of corruption, were not protected by litigation privilege and should be disclosed to the SFO. Fundamentally, he found that an SFO investigation, as opposed to a criminal prosecution, did not constitute adversarial litigation for the purpose of litigation privilege, and that as the internal investigation conducted by ENRC's former solicitors was to find out if there was any truth in a whistleblower's allegations, that investigation did not engage litigation privilege. In the Court of Appeal, a heavyweight bench, Lord Justices Leveson, Voss and McComb, found that criminal proceedings against ENRC were reasonably in contemplation when it initiated its investigations, noting at paragraph 93 of the judgment, the whole subtext of the relationship between ENRC and the SFO was the possibility, if not the likelihood, of prosecution if the self-reporting process did not result in a civil settlement. Significantly, even if at the time it starts its own inquiries, a company cannot be said to be under formal investigation, that does not prevent it from asserting litigation privilege over the documents prepared in its internal investigation. At paragraph 11, the court stated, Andrews J. was not right to suggest a general principle that litigation privilege cannot attach until either a defendant knows the full details of what is likely to be unearthed or a decision to prosecute has been taken. The fact that a formal investigation has not commenced will be one part of the factual matrix, but will not necessarily be determinative. The Court of Appeal then went on to find that the disputed documents were brought into existence for the dominant purpose of avoiding or resisting criminal proceedings, and thus litigation privilege was engaged. The Court of Appeal confirmed the continuing importance of the House of Lords regulatory case of War against British Railways Board, which revolved around a report prepared by the British Railways Board into a fatal railway accident. In a passage that is particularly helpful to companies considering the appropriate response to an allegation of regulatory non-compliance, the Court of Appeal held that it is, however, obviously in the public interest that companies should be prepared to investigate allegations from whistleblowers or investigative journalists prior to going to a prosecutor such as the SFO, without losing the benefit of legal professional privilege for the work product and consequences of their investigation. Were they to do so, the temptation might well be not to investigate at all, for fear of being forced to reveal what had been uncovered, whatever might be agreed or not agreed with a prosecuting authority. The importance of this decision for any corporate entity considering an investigation into regulatory non-compliance is clear. As a starting point, lawyers advising a company in such a situation should identify if adversarial proceedings with the regulator are reasonably contemplated, and if so, can then assess the grounds on which investigations can be conducted without fear that the regulator will later be able to demand the lawyer's entire investigatory work. Moving on to our second item, priority of environmental obligations in insolvency. In Reed Doonan Plant Hire Limited in liquidation, The Scottish outer house of the Court of Session, Lord Doherty, had to consider where liabilities under Section 59 of the Environmental Protection Act 1990 ranked in priority on the liquidation of an occupier of land upon which waste had been unlawfully deposited. This is the first consideration of that question in either Scotland or England. In the Doonan case, Lord Doherty held that expenditure in discharging the obligations arising under two notices served under Section 59, one pre-liquidation and the other post-liquidation, requiring the removal of waste, would be a liquidation expense in view of the nature of the liability imposed by a Section 59 notice through the prism of the Waste Framework Directive. He stated, "Otherwise, it is very likely that polluters who become insolvent would frequently escape paying for the damage to the environment which their conduct has caused." Lord Doherty considered the continuing liability of the company in liquidation to be mandated by the polluter pays principle, a result which he considered could be arrived at legitimately as a matter of statutory construction rather than potentially illegitimately by the application of some wider perceived policy of maximising environmental protection. He thus concluded that the exercise upon which I am engaged does not involve weighing the relative importance of protection of the environment on the one hand and the expeditious and equal distribution of available assets on the other. The exercise involves the proper characterisation of Section 59(1) notice liabilities in an insolvency. Crucially, litigation expenses have priority over preferential debts and ordinary debts. In other words, before any thought is given to the resolution of debts owed to creditors. Lord Doherty did hold such liquidation expenses would rank behind the liquidator's remuneration. So liquidators need not fear accepting appointments in respect of companies subject to environmental obligations. If the reasoning is not adopted in a similar case in England, then there will be clear practical consequences. A waste site blighted by insolvency of its owner would be significantly more likely to be cleaned up if it were situated in Eyemouth rather than in Berwick-upon-Tweed, 9 miles to the south. Conversely, unsecured creditors of the owner in Eyemouth would be far less likely to recover any dividend in such circumstances. The question is ripe for consideration by the Supreme Court. The Scottish approach is good for the environment, but relies upon a very strong application of the polluter pays principle in order to reach the conclusion that unsecured creditors should, in effect, be treated as if they were themselves polluters in a way that the public generally was not, merely because they have elected to give credit to a waste company. Further, it might be said that the polluter pays principle is in truth expressed at such a high degree of abstraction that its application by a court in any particular set of circumstances is indeed the very exercise in the weighing of factors which Lord Doherty disavowed as a potentially illegitimate judicial technique. It will surely not be long before these issues arise before an English court. Finally, the extension of the single-use plastic bag charge in England. Hot on the heels of the government publishing the responses to the consultation entitled Tackling the Plastic Problem, DEFRA announced plans on the 30th of August to extend the single-use plastic bag charge to all retailers and to increase the minimum charge to 10p, subject to consultation. The ban, introduced in 2015, has seen a drop of 86% in plastic bag sales in major supermarkets. That drop equates to a reduction from 140 bags per person to just 19 per person in 2016-17. Under the current regulations, the 5p charge must be levied on all single-use plastic bags sold in England by businesses with more than 250 employees. Extending it to all retailers would therefore mean having to remember to take a bag with you when you pop to the local convenience store for a pint of milk and the other bits and pieces that you forgot to get with your weekly shop. Many may have already had to change their behaviour, with 42% of independent retailers reportedly having voluntarily introduced a charge on plastic bags in their stores. Rather shamefully, if you're English, the plastic bag charge already applies to all businesses in Wales and Scotland. Given that the Future of the Sea report states that plastic in the ocean is projected to treble between 2015 and 2025, the revised and extended single-use plastic bag charge surely cannot come soon enough. The approach also raises a legitimate question about how government will meet its environmental obligations under the 25-year environment plan. Given the lack of concrete detail in the plan, it is reasonably conceivable that the focus on natural capital is going to lead to an increase in the burden on business to assess its own impact on the environment and to act on that impact, potentially affecting consumers. Government may not want to increase the regulatory burdens on businesses, but it may find that it has no choice. Thank you for tuning in for this Environment Law News podcast. For more information on any of these stories, or if you would like to discuss any of the topics raised in more detail, please contact Six Pump Court on 0207 797 8400, asking for Christopher Badger, or contact my colleagues at LexisNexis in the PSL Environment team.